This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Election results last week in Northern Ireland fulfilled what some there called the nightmare scenario. In what was widely regarded as a vote on the Good Friday Agreement that forged a fragile peace over the past few years, voters rewarded extremists and punished the moderates. The result leaves what many fear could be a dangerous stalemate. Later in the program, we'll turn to politics in this country and a court decision yesterday in Colorado that could redraw congressional maps in that state and maybe in Texas too. But first, Northern Ireland. For those of you in need of a quick refresher, we'll be talking about six main players, starting with the British and Irish governments, which brokered the power-sharing agreement known as the Good Friday Accords in 1998. There are two parties on the Protestant or Unionist side, the Ulster Unionists, led by Nobel Peace Prize winner David Trimble, and the hardline Democratic Unionists, led by the Reverend Ian Paisley. There are also two parties on the Catholic or Nationalist side, the moderate SDLP, the Social Democratic and Labour Party, and Sinn Féin, the political wing of the Irish Republican Army, which is led by Gerry Adams. Sinn Féin wants Northern Ireland to unite with the Republic of Ireland to the south. The Protestant parties want it to stay part of Great Britain, the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, after all. If you have questions about what happened last week, why, and what may happen next, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us from the BBC studios in Belfast is Adrian Gelke. He's a professor of politics at Queen's University and also directs their Center for the Study of Ethnic Conflict. And it's good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
Hi. Hello.
Is this the worst possible outcome that could have happened from last week's elections?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, this is, as you said, the nightmare scenario of the two extremes winning. And it's because the seesaw principle tends to operate, which is that people see the other side edging towards the extreme and they feel they need to edge to the extreme to balance it off, as it were. If you ask people what kind of government they would like, what kind of parties they would like to be involved in government, they say overwhelmingly the moderate parties. So in a poll at the beginning of this year, 43% of people wanted there to be a government involving the Ulster Unionists and the SDLP. Only 2% had any interest in an alliance between the extremes, between the Democratic Unionists and Sinn Féin. So it's people vote out of fear of what the other side are up to, basically.
Well, then why did the middle ground, the moderates, lose so much traction?
Well, when the Good Friday Agreement was signed, the Unionists felt that it wasn't sufficiently good on decommissioning, basically, and they pressed for assurances from the British government that there would be decommissioning. And they asked for things that actually weren't directly in the agreement itself.
We should explain decommissioning for those who are not...
Decommissioning means demilitarization, the IRA getting rid of its weapons. Basically, what the Good Friday Agreement said was that all paramilitary organizations, all terrorists, if you will, should get rid of all their weapons within 2 years of the referendum on the Good Friday Agreement. That was the deal. Now, what happened at the first elections in June 1998 is that the Ulster Unionists went into that election saying they wouldn't form a government unless there was decommissioning. And they'd had certain assurances during the referendum campaign from the British Prime Minister that he would press for decommissioning to happen quickly. But basically, the Sinn Féin resisted that, and they had a basis in the agreement for resisting that. And so the Ulster Unionists were trying to get Sinn Féin excluded from the executive. And the more the Unionists tried to get Sinn Féin excluded, the more there was resentment on the Nationalist side, and the more there was support for Sinn Féin. So that tactic proved counterproductive. It also meant that those Unionists who were disillusioned in the agreement in the first place sort of said, well, it can't work. The Ulster Unionists are demanding things, but they're not actually getting anywhere. So that's why, as it were, Unionists became disillusioned with the agreement and why Nationalists got resentful as what they saw as attempts by the Unionists continually to push them out of government. Now, Ian Paisley, who's the leader of the Democratic Unionists, kind of encapsulated the spirit of the DUP campaign this time round with a little badge he wore at the count when the votes were being counted. and was Trimble superimposed on a cockerel with the words, "Cockle-doodle-doo, didn't the IRA make a fool out of you?" So that gives you an idea where Paisley is coming from and the unlikelihood that he will try and do a deal with Sinn Féin. That's why we're in such difficulty.
Now, the Good Friday Accord mandates that the parties that win the majority in on either side have to sit down together. They're supposed to be the executive. They're supposed to share power.
They are supposed to share power. But it depends upon there being majorities in favor of the operation on the agreement in both communities. Otherwise, the system just simply can't function. And that's where we are. And what the DUP says is that this agreement says there has to be majority of nationalist consent to government in Northern Ireland. The British government has made that a condition of devolved government. Well, there has to be unionist consent, and we're not going to give it. And we're not going to give it until Sinn Féin makes sure that the IRA goes completely out of business, that the IRA kind of get rid of all their weapons and the sort of linked paramilitary activities. Now, obviously, many people would like to see paramilitary activities disappear, but the difficulty is they operate, they're also loyalist paramilitaries who don't have so much political influence and who are not represented in government. And there's the problem of general sectarianism, which keeps paramilitaries alive. So it's not easy to imagine the paramilitaries simply are going to go away simply because people kind of wish them to go away.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. And let's get a caller on the line. Andrew joins us from Oakland, California.
Hi. Thank you very much for inviting my comments and question. I actually studied at Queen's University in 1996, where Dr. Gokey teaches. And I'm curious about the presentation in the opening little blurb there. Of the program, making it seem as if the two extremes are the problem, because as Dr. Gulley mentioned, it's the Democratic Unionists in Paisley who have refused to form a government after this election. And indeed, my understanding is that they ran on with that as their campaign pledge, that they were going to bring down the Good Friday Agreement. And so when you pose it as Sinn Féin and the Democratic Unionists, yes, they're the more avid supporters in each of their respective communities, but Sinn Féin is actually willing to sit down and form a government with the Democratic Unionists. So I'm curious about that.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, we have a clip of tape of Gerry Adams, who's the leader of the Sinn Féin party. And this is him speaking after the election last week. Let's listen to what Gerry Adams had to say.
If I can address some personal remarks to Mr. Paisley, I'm not a Christian clergyman. I'm not the leader of a church. But I don't know of anything within the Christian philosophy which is not about dialogue, conversation, and dealing with sinners. And as a sinner, I offer myself up on behalf of those who I represent to be converted by Dr. Paisley to his vision of the future. We have a confidence that our vision of an inclusive, agreed Ireland, of an Ireland where people are at peace with each other, is the way which the majority of people want to go.
A very reasonable sounding, Gerry Adams speaking.
Indeed.
There. Adrian,
well, I would certainly say that Sinn Féin's political position is more reasonable than the Democratic Unionists' political position. But Sinn Féin also connected to a paramilitary organization and the Democratic Unionists aren't. So you sort of you have to trade to some extent on whether the politics matters more than the kind of other kinds of links organizations have.
Andrew, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm just curious because the links with the paramilitary organization, the Irish Republican Army, this kind of mantra has been heard from academia, from the Ulster Unionist Party, the Democratic Unionist Party, and the British government since the beginning of this process. And the IRA has been relatively silent since the beginning of this process. And, you know, other people say, well, let sleeping dogs lie, and let's get on with, like, if you look at this, you're trying to encourage a political movement in a community which has relied on armed struggle to achieve their means. Now, what's happened since the beginning of this process is that the Ulster Unionists have been allowed to delay the process and been backed up by the British government. And then what happens is now you have Paisley to deal with. And so to me, it looks like Tony Blair is reaping what he sowed.
That's another point we'll get to, Andrew. But don't you feel as if the IRA itself has delayed the political process by refusing to decommission its arms?
I don't. Actually, if you look at what happened, John de Chastelain, who's the head of the Independent Commission on Decommissioning, he was happy with what they did. And David Trimble is actually, and I'd love to hear Mr. Gilkey's comments on this, David Trimble is the one that refused to acknowledge that act of decommissioning.
Mr. Gilkey?
The difficulty is we don't know what proportion of the IRA's weapons they have decommissioned. They have decommissioned some, which is obviously a very big step. But part of the problem has been that unionist expectations of what would happen were raised to a level that was not achievable, really, in some respects. So when the bar was set so high that there would be this complete decommissioning, and we've very far short of that, there is a difficulty. There is another difficulty as well, if I can put it this way. Sinn Féin did very well by presenting themselves as the peace party. They are the party of peace. But the paradox of that is, to be the party of peace, there has to be at least the possibility that other things could happen. So if we had total normalisation, then people might vote for political parties on all kinds of policy grounds. They might look for smaller parties like environmentalists. They might vote anyway. But Sinn Féin has a lock on a lot of voters by presenting itself as the party of peace, which is enormously appealing on the nationalist side. And our caller is quite right in saying that for nationalists, they feel that the IRA has done the business by maintaining a ceasefire, and then asking them for more is in fact kind of going too far. So there is a very strong divide between nationalist opinion about what is reasonable to ask the IRA to do and unionist opinion. And that's what has caused the difficulty. The British government has tried to sort of weave a path through the different perceptions of the two communities, sometimes not very successfully.
Well, what about Andrew's last point, which was that this is what Prime Minister Blair has, in a sense, created by not supporting the middle?
Well, he's tried to support the middle, but he's been somewhat inconsistent. I mean, last October he was saying that more or less the IRA had to disband before anything could happen. In the most recent attempt at a deal, which broke down, it didn't seem that Blair was asking a great deal of the IRA, who was happy with what de Chastelain had said the IRA had done. So I think from a unionist perspective, they see Blair as somebody who's not entirely consistent in maintaining the same position all the way through, which doesn't obviously enhance unionist confidence in the process. That's the difficulty.
Just to clarify the de Chastelain comment, he was the man who's supposed to be supervising what, in fact, the IRA has decommissioned and what it hasn't. They did decommission something. He said it was significant, but he was not allowed by the IRA Sinn Féin side to say how much. So this led to some skepticism on the unionist side that indeed that's what Mr. Chastelain might regard as significant, they would regard as significant.
Yeah. The word he used, I think, was substantial, but the difficulty is this, really. If you get rid of, say, half a ton of weapons, that's substantial in anybody's terms. But it's substantial in absolute terms, not proportionate to the total amount of weaponry the IRA have. I think security forces in the Republic of Ireland estimate that the IRA have 100 tons of weapons. Now, if they've decommissioned half a ton, that would only actually be half of 1%, so proportionately that would not be very great, even if half a ton was an enormous amount.
We're talking about Northern Ireland and what happens next with a political process that appears to be stalled. We'll take more of your calls after a break. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing where the peace process stands now in Northern Ireland after last week's General Assembly elections put Ian Paisley's hardline Protestant party, the DUP, in the majority. If you have questions about the elections and what they mean for the future in the six counties, give us a phone call at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest from the studios of the BBC in Belfast is Adrian Gehlke, a professor of politics at Queen's University in that city. Over the next couple of minutes, we're going to be joined by members of the Ulster Unionist Party and the Social Democratic and Labour Party. We requested interviews with representative of Ian Paisley's Democratic Unionist Party and Gerry Adams Sinn Féin. We had not heard back from either of their offices by airtime. Very busy political times in Northern Ireland. Perhaps they're tied up in discussions. Having said that, we're now pleased to be joined by Sir Reg Empey, who's vice president of the Ulster Unionist Party. And it's very good of you to join us today.
Good evening, Neil. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I wanted to play a cut of tape for you this is your party leader, David Trimble. This is just before the election results were known, when he said he was sure that his party would receive the majority of the votes and beat out the hardliners.
There has been bombastic claim after bombastic claim, week in, week out, month in, month out, year in, year out, which is resistant of the facts, because the facts repeatedly show that they don't and that they won't.
Given that, the results must certainly have come as a disappointment.
Well, just for your listeners, there's no party has a majority. We have a different system of voting to you, where it's proportional representation. So that the four main party blocks here each have around the mid-20s in terms of the percentage of the vote. So nobody has a majority, but each group has a particular proportion of it. So it's not quite as drastic as it sounds. And we only lost one seat in the election, which is not a huge amount, but because the numbers are so close, it did make a difference to us, and we're disappointed about that. But I suspect most parties, having been through what we have been through, if they only lost one seat after 5.5 years, would consider that they hadn't done too bad.
Yet there is a split within your party and a faction that says we have to pay attention to the results of this election and perhaps you cue a little bit more closely to the DUP line and listen to what the voters say. Your own party is divided.
Well, I mean, that's not a unique feature to us. I mean, there's divisions in parties in your country as well. Nevertheless, one must pay attention to the democratic process. But at the end of the day, 70% of the people who voted and 70% of those who were elected are in favour of the Good Friday Agreement. And it is our task to ensure that it is fully implemented. And unfortunately, the reason for our current difficulties is because just over a year ago, there was a spy scandal in our government here where the Republican movement, the Sinn Féin and the IRA were involved in spying on members of the government by getting documents and so on, and that brought the administration down in October of last year. Now, we are trying to recover from that, but I have to stress that if we look at the situation in the Middle East, our difficulties with our peace process should not be compared with the difficulties there, because at least, thank God, we have had the quietest and most non-violent summer here in Northern Ireland this year than we've had in 30 years. So, yes, we've had a setback, but nevertheless, we're enjoying a period of unprecedented peace and calm compared with previous years.
Yet, if the political process is stalled and the DUP refuses to sit down with Sinn Féin and demands that the Good Friday Accords be renegotiated, and everybody else, including your party, says no, that's not going to be renegotiated. It's the fundamental principles we all must move forward on. Doesn't that leave an opening for a return to the bad old days?
No, I don't think it does. The reason why Mr. Paisley's party has done well has been largely because the question of paramilitary arms and weaponry has not been resolved properly, and it hasn't been resolved on time. But I don't think our community is going to go back. Mr. Paisley's party will have to do business with Sinn Féin. It does at local level, and they don't pretend to their supporters that they do, but we know they do. They'll have to. There's no way of avoiding that reality. And the rhetoric that they've used and the emotional blackmail that they used during the election will not be able to be sustained into the future, and I think most people realise that. So there was a certain protest vote, but we are determined to implement the agreement. We are determined to move forward, both in terms of security and economically. And, of course, I had responsibility in the outgoing administration for economics and the economy generally. And I know, and everybody else knows, that we have no intention of going back to the bad old days. So, yes, we have a stalemate at the moment. Yes, we have difficulties, but we will just have to overcome those difficulties, just as we've had to do in the past.
One final question before we let you go. Your party leader, David Trimble, and the rest of you in the Ulster Unionists throughout this process have taken what many people respectfully call great risks for peace. You went out on a limb. Do you feel in some ways as if, you've taken it in the neck this time around?
Well, that is true, but I don't regret that. I see Northern Ireland as a better place, a more peaceful place. We are still a good place for investment in Europe. And yes, we perhaps haven't had the reward so far that we might like to think we should have had. But at the end of the day, you have to listen to the people. They have a right to choose their representatives. And that's what distinguishes a democratic country from a non-democratic country. And I know we're all going through the same situation in Iraq. Perhaps people don't feel that they have been rewarded for taking on Saddam Hussein at the moment. But in the long term, it's the right thing to do. And we believe that we have done the right thing. And ultimately, we will succeed with it, because I believe that we can't go back where we were. We must move forward. And we must. We're having Richard Haass visit us. The President's representative in Northern Ireland is coming to see us again this week. And we are aware that your government has played a very active role, both President Clinton and President Bush and their administrations. We acknowledge that and appreciate that. And we have no intention of turning our backs on the progress that we have made. And we will have to continue to persuade our people that this is the way forward. But Republican Movement and Sinn Féin have got to implement the agreement, totally finish their any connection with violence whatsoever, and be committed to exclusively peaceful and democratic means. That is the way ahead, and if that is implemented, then I believe the support of the people will return to us.
Sir Reg Empey, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Sir Reg Empey is Vice President of the Ulster Unionist Party. He was on the phone with us from Belfast in Northern Ireland. And Adrian Gehlke, yes. David Trimble, as we mentioned, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, took enormous risks, is now facing calls from within his own party for him to resign. Can he survive?
I think he can, actually. Certainly Geoffrey Donaldson is very vocal in calling for him to go, but I think the majority of the party support Trimble continuing, and I don't think we'll see a challenge to his leadership before March, when the regular Ulster Unionist Council meeting takes place. So, in fact, the last few days have rather suggested that nothing very much is going to happen on that front for a while.
Joining us now on the line from Port Stewart in County Derry, Northern Ireland, is Sean Farron. He's a member of the Social Democratic and Labour Party, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good evening.
Your party lost 6 seats in these elections from 24 to 18. Again, you must be very disappointed.
Well, we're disappointed, but we're not down. And politics move up and down. I think as anybody observing democracies anywhere will be able to say. And I think that, yes, the SDLP has suffered a setback now, but I think that we're resilient, and I think that as one of the prime architects of the Good Friday Agreement, indeed in the eyes of many, the prime architect of the Good Friday Agreement, the party will be back, and indeed we will assert our right to be as fully involved in the process as any other party. And I think that rather than lick our wounds, what we have to do now is to look for the opportunities which exist, even in what appear to be at the outset the most intransigent of situations. I think that while there is a lot of rhetoric which would suggest that there can be no coming together in the short term between parties like the DUP and Sinn Féin, that beneath that rhetoric there are signs that would enable us to build a greater degree of hope, and indeed the prospect of an agreement, if not in the immediate term, at least to look forward over the next 6 to 9 months to the possibilities of restoring the institutions. Because when we look at what the Good Friday Agreement has offered, it has offered essentially a partnership between our two communities here in Northern Ireland, a partnership between Northern Ireland and the south of Ireland, and indeed a partnership between the whole of Ireland and the component parts of the UK. And that, I think, is very difficult for any party who wants to see a way forward to argue for setting aside. Some of the details of the partnership and the way in which it has been constructed in terms of the Good Friday Agreement mm-hmm. may indeed be open to scrutiny, and there may indeed be the prospect of some procedural change, but not in the fundamental principles which underlie that agreement. And I think it's more with detail and procedural detail of procedural matter that we'll find ourselves concerned when the talking begins, whether it is directly between Sinn Féin and the DUP, a prospect that doesn't seem likely at the moment, or more indirectly with the two governments mediating the process.
If the situation is allowed to stay in a stalemate with you know, nothing going on, the DUP still refusing to negotiate with Sinn Féin, still demanding fundamental changes to the Good Friday Agreement, isn't that a dangerous situation?
Well, of course it's a dangerous situation. Any stalemate offers prospects and opportunities for those who want to destabilize the situation from outside the democratic process. But the challenge to politicians, and after all, last week's election saw 108 politicians democratically elected, the challenge to them is to use their talents and the opportunities which exist in order to explore how we can get round the current stalemate. And if we fail, then indeed we need to be derided by the population. I don't think that we will fail. I think that, in fact, there is enough talent, enough ability, and indeed enough concern for the future here in Northern Ireland in all respects, economically, socially, as well as politically, to galvanize the political abilities within the main parties to achieve a breakthrough ultimately. Because as I listened to Reg Empey talking about what transpires between Sinn Féin representatives and DUP representatives at local government level. Indeed, we saw it within the committee structure of the Assembly when it was in operation. There is a real desire to work together on what we call bread and butter issues. And if that exists, then I can't, for the life of me, see why we can't find the will to address some of the current political difficulties that we all face.
Sean Farron, thanks you very much for taking the time to speak with us this evening.
Okay.
Sean Farron, a member of the Social Democratic and Labour Party. He was with us from Port Stewart in County Derry. And again, we did invite representatives of the DUP and Sinn Féin to join us. They were unable to do so. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Adrian Gehlke is still with us at the studios of the BBC in Belfast. And let's take another caller. And this would be David, and David's with us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Hi, good evening. I'm quite interested in your program, and I've been listening from the beginning. And I think one of the fundamental facts that has allowed this situation to come to pass reflects a historical failing of the British government, and Blair is just the latest person to fail to address this. And this is their unwillingness to face down what is essentially a unionist, fundamentalist veto of any sort of agreement. And I think Tony Blair is partially to blame by constantly pandering to the unionist demands to adjust and manipulate the agreement when in actual fact they had a very clear and workable agreement to start with. And what Tony Blair has failed to do is to make the unionists understand that the agreement will not be renegotiated, and this is what they have to work with.
Adrian Galkey?
I agree with that partially. I think that it was a great pity that at the start of the agreement in 98, when Trimble was seeking assurances on decommissioning of parliamentary weapons, that Blair intervened to sort of support, try and provide support for Trimble. It may have been out of the best of motivations, but I mean, what we really needed was cooperation in the centre. In other words, we needed Trimble cooperating with the SDLP rather than seeking Blair's support. So the tendency was created for the unionists to go to London and seek support for London for their demands, not really try to get cross-community support for their position and try to get cross-community support on how we should go forward on the issue of parliamentaries, which is a double-sided issue, obviously, because loyalist parliamentaries also exist. It isn't simply a case of one side only has parliamentaries. The parliamentary problem would have much better have been dealt with through negotiations within Northern Ireland between the moderate parties rather than through the governments, I think.
Yeah. We just have a minute and a half or so left, but I wanted to ask you, Senator George Mitchell, an envoy from the United States, was critical to the process of negotiating the accords in the first place. What role might the U.S. play in this juncture?
Well, Richard Haass has certainly been there in the background, and he's certainly kind of played a part in talking to the parties, and on the whole, he's well respected and has made sensible comments on the situation. But I don't think that the current administration in the United States has quite the same leverage that the Clinton administration had, or quite the same obvious interest. I mean, other things have happened to grab America's attention. That's pretty obvious. But in addition, I think Clinton had much greater influence over the Irish-American groups that in turn had an influence over Sinn Féin than a Republican in the White House has over those same sort of groups.
Adrian Galkey, thanks very much for taking the time to be with us this evening.
Pleasure.
Adrian Galkey is a professor of politics at Queen's University and director of their Center for the Study of Ethnic Conflict. He joined us from the studios of the BBC in Belfast, Northern Ireland.